Okay. Shoftim, 7th parak. Let's recap what we're up to here. Gideon had been designated by Hashem to lead the Jews into battle against Midian, who had been plundering the Jewish people in the last 7 years. We've already been through the different tests that Hashem put Gideon through, but the Maaseh Gideon has proven himself worthy, and that's it. He's ready to go to battle. So, we're going to begin this part again, even though we saw some of it last week. Gideon rallied an army of 32,000 people. Not a very big army, but an army. He understands that he's going to get miraculous help anyways, so 32,000 people is enough. But then a surprising message comes from Hashem. So we begin Perek Zayin, Pasuk Beis. Vayomer Hashem el Gideon. Hashem says to Gideon, Rav ha'om asher itach. The people with you are too numerous. Mititi es Midian v'yodam. For me to give Midian into their hands. Too many people here. It's not going to do. What's the problem with too many people? Penispoya olai Yisrael lemor, because the Jewish people might glorify themselves. They might give themselves credit and say, Yodi Hashiali, I brought about this salvation. I did this. And that would defeat the purpose. Hashem wanted it to be very clear that He is stepping in to save His people. And therefore, even though, as we're going to see later, 32,000 people wasn't a very big army. They were facing an army of, we'll see later, about 150,000. So 32,000 people, if they would have won, it would have been miraculous. Yet, Hashem is saying, things have to be crystal clear. In those times, as we discussed, the whole glory of Klal Yisrael is not in the fact that they were a capable nation and you saw what they were able to do, but rather it's like we say in Hoidu, we glorify in the fact that everybody around sees who Hashem is because they see what He can do, and we glorify in the fact that we're the children. So therefore our pride comes from the fact that we see, look, Hashem did it for us again, that we live in Hashem's land and Hashem is busy fighting our battles. So therefore Hashem says, this has to be clear. 32,000 people, they might still be able to say, well, they were skilled soldiers, they were good fighters, right? No, that won't do. It has to be 100% clear that there was nothing natural about this. So therefore, we have to thin the ranks a little bit. Ve'ata. So therefore, now, Krona ba'ozneo omlema. Go ahead and announce to the people, saying as follows: Mi yore v'chavid. Who is afraid? Who is tremulous? Yashoy v'yatzpor mehar Gilad. Let him go back in the morning from Har Gilad. Har Gilad was a neighboring mountain. They were camped, not on Har Gilad. They were at Ein Charoid, which was okay. But Har Gilad was a neighboring mountain. So he said, anybody who's afraid, let them leave the camp now. Not going to want to travel at night. So let them leave the camp now, go to Har Gilad, and they'll stay there till the morning. In the morning they'll go home. Vayoshav Minam, so he made this grand announcement. Vayoshav Minam es Mishnayim Elef. 22,000 out of the 32,000 left. Vasaras Alafim Nish'orim. There were 10,000 left. So, okay, 10,000. We boiled it down to 10,000. That's already reasonable. But no, that's not going to do either. So before we move on, let's just note a couple of things. So first of all, we're going to note this now. We'll see the significance of it later. He didn't tell them to go straight home. He told them, go to a neighboring mountain and wait there till the morning. In the morning you'll go home. Why is that significant? Because the truth is, as we're going to see soon, Gideon knew that it's going to happen tonight. The big miracle is going to be, presumably a war like this would be an issue of a couple of weeks. But Gideon knew that it was actually going to happen tonight. And he wanted these people to be on hand when the battle is actually won and it's just an issue of chasing. Let them be there. When they see that we're winning, they won't be so scared anymore. They'll come and join us. But the actual battle would just be done with the thinned ranks. Now he was left with 10,000, and he thought that that was an ideal number, the Mefarshim say. He thought that that was an ideal number. Why? Because a little bit earlier, in the time of Devorah, Hashem had set that as the quota. Hashem said, get together an army of 10,000 people. So Gideon thought, oh, perfect, we've reached the number of 10,000. But no. Vayema Hashem el Gideon, Hashem said to Gideon, Oid ha'am rav. No, the nation is still too numerous. Here, 10,000 won't do. Why? Because the nation was now at a lower state than they were in the time of Devorah, the Mefarshim say. In the time of Devorah, the 10,000, why 10,000? It's based on an interesting possible figure that we have 10,000 people, there will be 10 true tzaddikim. You hear that? If we have 10,000 people, there will be 10 true tzaddikim. Once there are 10 true tzaddikim, that warrants a victory. Because there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, Ish echod ve'elef matzasi, I find one good man out of 1,000. So, 10,000 people will have a minion of 10 truly righteous men. True. However, we'll put that into perspective. When we say, what's that? Okay. But when we say it's sad, we have to realize that we're talking here when we're saying 1 out of 1,000, it doesn't mean that 1 out of 1,000 are upstanding citizens. It means that 1 out of 1,000 reach the ultimate. That's what we mean. But Hashem is saying that was going to be the case in Devorah. We'll have the 10 righteous people. Again, it's relative. The others were good enough, but they wouldn't. They had to be that core of 10 righteous people. The surplus, okay, they won't hurt. But in this case, Hashem is saying it will hurt. The people on the lower level now. If we're going to have any more than the basic core that I want, we're going to have people that are not completely up to par, then you know what's going to happen? All those surplus people are going to say, all those extra people are going to say, oh, it was us, right? What if you have the army, 90% of the army thinks that they won through their own skill. And then you have the 10% of the army who are saying, no, it's only Hashem. Well, the impression is going to be problematic. That's what we see today, right? You scream and yell that it's not an issue of the army's skill. When Hashem decides yes, it's yes. When Hashem decides not, it's not. But no, it gets drowned out. So Hashem is saying, no, in earlier times, in Devorah's times, even the people, and here we're also seeing this point brought home, even the people who couldn't actually constitute the core of those people who would actually bring about the victory, they were still on the level that then when they would see the victory, they would know to attribute it in the right way. They would know to attribute it to Hashem. So therefore, if we have 10 people who are really worthy of bringing out the victory, and another 9,990 who are also there, the other 9,990 are on high enough a level that when they see it happen, they'll say, this is Hashem's victory. But now he said we're not on that level either. If we're going to have a few thousand people who are not on the right level, and those few that are on the right level, the extras, they're going to say, oh, it was our great fighting. And therefore, I don't want that. I want anybody extra out of the way. So therefore, here 10,000 people is also not good enough. This was the way battles were fought in biblical times. This is how battles worked. It was completely according to spiritual standards because, again, it was Hashem openly fighting for them. So what happens? Here we reach the next stage of the selection process. Vayemer Hashem el Gideon. Hashem said to Gideon, Oid ha'am rav. No, there are still too many people. There are still too many people. Hayed oisam el amayim. Take them down to the water. Take them to the river. There, I'll really boil it down. I'll tell you what to do. You take them to the river, and there we'll separate the men from the men. You get down to the river. Those people who I tell you, I'm going to prescribe a certain test, and the people who I say should go with you,
Hu yelech itcha. He'll go with you. V'kol asher oimar eilecha ze lo yelech imach. And those who I'll say he should not go with you, hu lo yelech, he won't go. So simply understood, Hashem is giving a directive here. Only take the ones who I say to take. Don't take the ones who I say not to take. But the truth is, it's a little deeper than this. Malbim says, no, Hashem is actually, is a prophecy here. Hashem is saying, the ones who I tell you to take, those are the ones who will really go with you in full spirit. If I tell you this one should go, it means he's going to go in the same mindset as you. He's going to approach this battle not feeling I'm the one who's going to win this battle, but he's going to approach the battle with the same faith as you, feeling I am simply representing Hashem who's about to perform a miracle. The ones who I say should not go with you, those are the ones who are not going to go properly anyways. Meaning even if they would go, they're not going to be wholehearted, they'll be scared, they'll be doubtful. So, I'm going to tell you who are the ones who are really ready to go in the right way, and who are the ones who are not really ready to go. Leave them home. So what happened? Vayered es ha'am el hamor. So, Gideon took the people down to the water. Vayema Hashem el Gideon. And Hashem said to Gideon, okay, here's the test. Tell them all to drink. 10,000 people coming down to the water to drink. Tell them all to drink. Now, you're told to drink from a river, what would you do? Most people will get down on their knees, stick their face down, and cup the water into their mouths. So he said, "Kasha yolik bil shoyne min amayim, kasha yolik hakelev tatzigoy selava." There are going to be some people among these 10,000 who are not going to get down on all fours. They're going to pull the water up in their hands like this to them, and then lick it out of their hands. Put them on one side. And then you'll have the others who will get down on all fours. They'll get down on their knees to drink. Put them on the other side. This is the test. The ones who will remain standing and simply draw the water up to them, those make it. Those qualify. No, not even that. They would simply bend over, take water up like that, knock it down on their knees. That's the point. They would not get down on their knees. So, yeah, the ones who pull water up with their hands, take them. The ones who get down on their knees, leave them. Those are not qualified. What's going on here? So, Chazal say something that sounds a little simplistic. Why is this the gauge? So, Chazal say that, well, what was the problem in those days? Jews were already starting to dabble in idolatry. Idolatry was starting to make inroads into the Jewish people. Therefore, people who would kneel shows that they're familiar with the concept. They're comfortable with idolatry. They kneel. And therefore, send them home. The people who don't, the people who pull it up to them without getting down on their knees, those are the people who are detached from idolatry. That's what Chazal say. But we have to develop this a little further. It has to be a little better understood. Because, again, if you would ask me, right, if you just take a group of people, tell them to go down to the riverside and drink, many of them are going to get down on their knees, right? I might. What's that? That's right, I have to bend over in an uncomfortable way. That's right. So what's the indication? If a person gets down on his knees to drink, that he's an idolater. It shows that he's an idolater. Well, that's what Hashem is saying. Anybody who gets down on his knees to drink, send him home. He's not good here. Anybody who gets down on his knees to drink is an idolater. And in fact, what actually happened? Listen to the numbers. Those who did pull the water up and lick it from their hands, shloishme is ish, the 300 men out of 10,000. Okay. The Kol Yetzer Ha'am, all the other ones, the other 9,700, they got down on their knees to drink. You really think that this was the ratio of idolaters of the Jewish people? And as we asked before, again, we're talking about 9,700 to 300. Okay? And also, as we asked before, a person gets down on his knees to drink, that's the most comfortable way of doing it. That shows that he's an idolater. So the truth is that there's certainly more to what's going on here. And here's a very profound point. What was the problem? The problem was that idolatry was starting to take hold in the Jewish people. It was starting to make inroads. Now, this was an infection that was spreading. Its influence was spreading.
And you have people who became succumbed. You have a lot of people who didn't. But Hashem was looking for those people who say, one minute, there's a problem starting here. I have to protect myself. And therefore, in order to completely detach themselves, they refrained from anything. They went a mile away. Right? These were people who said, kneeling is no longer a part of my life. Once kneeling is starting to become associated with idolatry, kneeling is no longer a part of my life. You have a lot of people who didn't engage in idolatry, but yet they felt, well, I'll make sure I won't worship idols, but they weren't taking special measures to distance themselves from it. Hashem said, that's not good enough for me. I want the people who are dedicated to me to the extent that they said, one minute, if a spiritual infection is starting to spread, if we're seeing that there's a drop in the standards of the Jewish people, it's not just enough for me to say, well, I won't. No, I'm going to distance myself from the whole phenomenon. I'm going to take measures to make sure that I'm not going to be influenced by this. My family will know that a Jewish person doesn't kneel. That's how I'm going to train my people. Others might say, it's a little extreme. You need to get something. You get down on your knees. No. I want my family to be completely removed and clean from anything even slightly associated with this plague, with this epidemic. These were the people Hashem chose. Yes, many of the other people might have been kosher Jews. But Hashem was saying, I want the people who are showing their horror, right? Idolatry is spreading. I'm going to distance myself from it as far as I possibly can. This was demonstrated by the people who awkwardly wouldn't get down on their knees, but simply picked the water up in their hands to drink. These were the people who are at a higher level. It's not just that they weren't actually worshipping idols. They were at that higher level. These were the people who were saying, as soon as I see idolatry, I'm going to be out of view. I'm going to be completely away from it. I'm going to take those extra measures. This was the select few that Hashem chose as the ones he wanted.
Maybe they walked into the water like till their waist without kneeling.
I don't know. The fact that there were 300 of them out of the 10,000, if it would have been easy enough, there would have been more. But the fact that there were 300 out of the 10,000 shows that it was a pretty not natural way to do it. Right? Which once again brings home the point that you just can't get away from when you're learning Kisvei HaKodesh, which again almost sometimes make it seem like fairy tales. How the first and last qualification for the Jewish military was spiritual quality. Right? These were often non-skilled soldiers, right? Often non-trained. They often didn't even have proper weapons. We'll see soon. We're going to see soon that most of the soldiers went without weapons. Right? This was how wars were fought in the great days of Tanakh. The earlier days of Tanakh. Later, as time progressed, in Judaism, generations don't progress, generations degenerate, right? But later we'll see, when they reached a point where they already needed a king, this is still in the days of the Shoftim, when the Jewish people were basically a self-governing nation. When they needed a king already, there was already an organized army. But here we're still at the point when there wasn't an army. When a problem came up, they got people together. And before you were accepted to the army, you had to pass all kinds of spiritual tests. You had to prove your piety. Because that was the qualification of a soldier in those days. Because once again, what was the army? The army was simply a forum for Hashem to come down and do His thing. And for Hashem to come down and do His thing, nothing to do with nature, the landing pad, if we'll call it that, for the Shekhinah to come down and battle the enemy, had to be a proper landing pad. Had to be people who are off the par. You can ask something?
If that's the criteria, then it should be known that Hashem's fighting the battles, and we don't get any credit.
That's right.
It's not our credit. So even if there's 2,000 were to win, or 300 were to win, it's not us.
That's exactly the point. Hashem wants that to be as clear as can possibly be.
So why not every battle should be as clear as can possibly be?
Each battle, the truth is, you're asking a good point. You're asking a good question. And this is worth addressing. In all the previous battles that we saw, we never saw to this extent that Hashem wanted 300 soldiers. We saw in the Battle of Devarah, which was completely miraculous, 10,000. In the time of Yeshua, they basically had the whole nation fighting. Right? There was armies of thousands in the time of Yeshua. All of a sudden, we're seeing here a new principle. Now, Hashem wants it to be open, and therefore 300 people are going to take on an army of 100,000. What happened now? So the Mepharshim say something interesting. The difference is, once again, in the spiritual standard of the nation in general. In the time of Yeshua, the whole nation was a nation of great people. And therefore, the very fact that there were masses going out to fight in representation of Hashem, that itself brought glory to Hashem. Here you have hundreds of thousands of soldiers, right? I don't know if it was hundreds of thousands, at least tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of soldiers, yes. All, each one is a Gadol Hador, right? Each one is a Chafetz Chaim, right? Each one is on the level that all they manifested, all they felt when they were going out to battle was, we are simply carrying the banner of Hashem. That caused very, very great glory for Hashem. That's a pasuk that says, "Beroiv am hadras melech." The masses who are serving Hashem properly, they bring honor to the king. But this was already a later period. This was a period where the standards of the nation was dropping. This was a period where people in general were not on that level of sensitivity. This was a period where most people who would have gone out to war would have come back and said, "Oh, look at the skills we've developed." Right? Here Hashem says, we have to turn it all the way around. Here, the only way to bring glory for Hashem is to basically have a handful of people going out and fighting a formidable enemy. So, it was even more so in the time of Devarah. In the time of Devarah, at least we were able to say, an army of 10,000, even the ones who are not mamish on that level, will at least be able to acknowledge, when they come back from the battle, they'll say, this was Hashem's battle, there could be no other explanation. But here it wasn't like that anymore. Here if we would have an army of 10,000, most people would come back and say, that was a good war we fought.
Also therefore more of an open miracle than over here.
Not really, as we'll see in a minute. Not really.
No.
We'll see. Maybe. You know, the truth is you're right, because here the open miracle was the fact that it was 300.
Yeah.
If it would have been 10,000, you're right. Might not have been as open a miracle. That's right. Okay. So, that's what happened. Vayemer Hashem el Gideon. So now Gideon has his army. Now he's ready to take on the enemy. Now it's a properly equipped army. We got rid of any excess baggage. 300 people. That's an army that can fight. Vayemer Hashem el Gideon. Hashem says to Gideon, Vishloish me'isa ish hamelakikim. Yes, with these 300 people who simply slurped the water out of their hands, Oishia eschem. It's through them that I'm going to save you. V'rasati es Midian biyodecha, and I'm going to put Midian into your hands. V'kol ha'am yelchu ish l'mkoim. Everybody else, let them just go home. Okay. V'yikhu es tzedo ha'am biyod. So all the people left very willingly. They weren't resentful. And these 300 people, they took all of the provisions. V'eshefresein. And they took all of the shefaros. This is important because this is disproportionate. Every army, the division, has a person blowing a shofar, right? Because that's kind of like the battle cry, leads them into battle. Each division has its shofar. When you take an army of what was originally 30,000 people, you boil it down to 300 people, and they're keeping all the shofars, it ends up very disproportionate. What ended up happening is, in a minute, we're going to see that it was a shofar per person. Here's what their weapons. They're carrying it, they're going to bang the enemy over the head with a shofar. Well, we'll see. But it was a shofar per person. This was disproportionate in an army. You had the one person in the division who blew. But now, no, they made a point of retaining all the shofars that had been there originally. They wanted a shofar for each man. Each of the 300 men has a shofar. Okay. Ves kol yish Yisrael shilach ish la'olav. Everybody else, all of the original 31,700 people, he sent them back home. Ubishloish me'isa ish hechzik, and he retained only these 300 men. Umachanem Midian ha'olam itachas ba'imek, and he was situated on this mountain called Ein Charoid, and the camp of Midian was down in the valley beneath. Okay, that's it. They're ready to take them on. Vayihi ba'laylahu, and it wasn't that night. Vayemer elav Hashem. And Hashem said to him, "Kum reid b'machane." All right, get up and go down into the camp of Midian. Ki nesati biyodecha, because I have delivered them into your hand. It's already a done deed. That's it. Looks like there's an army of 100. We'll see soon. About 120,000 people there. There's nothing there really. They're all gone. They're finished. Now, v'im yorei atol oredes. If you're afraid to go down, Mean you're afraid to attack them just as is? I'll give you a means of becoming encouraged. Reid ato upura naarcho elamachade. You and your helper Pura go sneak towards the camp quietly. Vishamato ma'idabeu, and listen what you hear them say. Va'achar techezakno yodecho. Then you'll feel strengthened. You'll feel confident. Virato ba'machade. And then you'll be confident enough to go down and fight. Okay. Now, Midian va'amalek. Now, the people of Midian and of Amalek, the Chol Bnei Kedem and the other people of the east, Noiflim ba'emek ka'ar belerot. Gidon is up on top of the mountain with his 300 men. He's looking down into the valley. It was a vast valley, and he said when they saw the camp of Midian with their allies, they were like locusts. Ligmaleim nisbar. Their camels were too much to count. Kachol shal sfas hayom leroit. Like the sand of the sea. And he looked down into the valley. It was a very, very broad expanse, and he simply saw it was covered with people. That there were masses and masses there. Like you said, it was more than 100,000 people. And Gideon is told, go attack. If you're afraid, go listen to what they're talking, and you'll be okay. Here also we have to note how we keep seeing, it's very interesting, how Hashem is accommodating the whole time Gideon's hesitancy. The whole time Gideon is hesitant. Each time he's, should I go ahead with it? And Hashem is very patiently leading him from one step to the next, which is seems to contrast with people we've seen earlier, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, the tiniest expression of the subtlest lack of confidence, boom, he was smashed over the head with a punishment. Right, Avraham Avinu, Hashem didn't countenance such things. Why all of a sudden do we see Gideon getting this so much more patience from Hashem? Right, where are the strict standards Hashem usually operates with? But this is a classic example of that we have to understand that no, when we see the harsh treatment that Hashem gave our ancestors of earlier times, it's not because Hashem was harsh. No, it's because Hashem deals with each person according to his level and makes demands according to his expectations of that person. Hashem always demands of each person, I want you to put yourself according to the level that you're at. No, Hashem did not expect of Gideon to be an Avraham Avinu. Yes, what Avraham Avinu got punished for by Gideon was, you can deal with it, it was bearable, because Gideon was on a lower level and Hashem was willing to deal with that. So therefore, on the contrary, whereas a Moshe Rabbeinu or an Avraham Avinu would have gotten harshly punished for this, Hashem is telling Gideon, okay, I'll help you out, I'll guide you along. Okay. Which in general is important to realize. Hashem is not out there to get us. Sometimes you hear descriptions of, you know, Imek Hadin, Dikduk Hadin, right? How penetrating Hashem's judgment is. Hashem is not out there to get us. Hashem wants us to succeed. Yeah, to succeed. And Hashem is there to help us succeed. On your level, He expects you to maintain your standard and to be moving ahead. He always wants you to be pushing that little bit ahead. But Hashem is not going to come and ask you why weren't you a Moshe Rabbeinu. At least not why you weren't you a Moshe Rabbeinu in one shot. That He won't come and ask you. He might ask you, why aren't you working towards Moshe Rabbeinu? Right? He might ask you, why didn't you take that extra step ahead? But as long as you're taking that one step at a time, as long as you're not standing still, you're taking that one step ahead at a time, Hashem is not only willing to work with you, but He's right there with you. Like I'm seeing here with Gideon. Hashem says, you're scared? I'm going to help you not be scared. Go listen to what they're talking. I'm going to set things up that you'll be encouraged. So what happens? Vayavar. Gideon. So Gideon sneaks down to the Midian camp with his helper, Pura. V'hine ish misaper l're'iv. Sorry, just a minute. Yeah. V'hine ish misaper l're'iv. And he hears a man talking to his friend. Gideon had approached the outermost layer of the camp. They came close to where the guards were standing. Not maintaining a safe distance, they came within earshot of where the guards were. To hear just what the guards are saying. And they hear one person telling his fellow, Chalom, he's telling him a dream that he had. Vayayim. And this Midian guard says, Hine chalom chalamti. I had a dream. Vihine tzlil lechem so'ir. And I saw a very a cake of barley bread, very coarse baked item, a cake of barley bread mishapech b'machane Midian, is rolling around the camp of Midian. Again, we're talking about a camp of 100,000 people, and there's a loaf of barley bread. You see, a loaf of barley bread is rolling around the camp like a bowling ball, literally. And then it reached the area of the tents, meaning there was the outer area where there was the training, the soldiers were standing guard. Inside were the tents, the barracks. Okay, and this little loaf of barley bread rolls to the tent area. Vayakeu, knocked into the tents. Vayipor, and the tents collapsed. The whole camp of Midian is collapsing. A bowling ball. Barley turns into a bowling ball. It's knocking over all the pins. Right? Vayapcheu lemalo, and it turned the tents completely upside down. It knocked them over with such force that they simply rolled over. The nofala oil, and all the tents collapsed. So try to picture the scene, a very strange scene. Picture a loaf of bread, even if it's round, rolling around, rolling from place to place, banging into one tent after the other, and the tents simply, they fall over with such force. Completely unnatural. And his fellow answered and said, "Ein zois bilti im chered Gidon ben Yoyosh." You know what that must mean? That must be referring to the sword of Gidon, the son of Yoyosh, Ish Yisrael, the man of Yisrael. Nosan elikim biyodoy es Midian ves kolamachan. Hashem has put into his hands, delivered into his hand, Midian and the entire camp. So note how uncanny this is. We're talking about a soldier of the Midian army. These people have been in control for the last 7 years. Lately, there's a new name on the scene, Gidon. He started becoming a little famous among the Jewish people, not even as a fighter necessarily. They heard that he was rallying forces, but that one of the Midianite people should say, "Oh, you have this dream about a loaf of barley rolling around. I know what that means. That you see this whole huge camp here, the U.S. Army is about to get wiped out by this Gidon." That itself was an ace. The very fact that that's how he related to it, that itself was an ace. But Hashem was showing him, look, the miracles are already starting to happen. The miracles are already starting to happen. You have nothing to fear. Now, Vayehi kishmaya Gidon es mispar chaloin ve'es shivoy. When Gidon heard this account of the dream and its interpretation, Vayishtachu, he bowed down. Meaning he heard that, yes, the miracles are already starting to happen. And he was, yes, he was strengthened, he was encouraged. Vayoshov el machane Yisrael, came back to the Jewish camp, it's 300 people. Vayomer, and he said, "Kumu, arise, ki nosan Hashem biyedchem es machane," because Hashem has delivered into your hand the camp of Midian. Now, let's just know, what is the significance? The significance of the barley bread has a double significance, or maybe even a triple significance. The significance to the barley bread per se. So first of all, these Midianites were coming, they had basically not really faced any resistance in the last 7 years that they had been operating in Eretz Yisrael. They were there to plunder. Right? They were there to plunder, and the Jewish people were simply susceptible victims. They were weak and they weren't able to do anything about it. They were completely at the mercy of these plunderers. This season happened to be, as we already mentioned earlier, this season happened to be the barley season. It was the season of the barley harvest. And they were there ready to plunder barley. And all of a sudden, what they were planning on plundering, what they were planning on victimizing, suddenly turned around and completely knocked them all over. This is what's going on here, showing that what they related to as just helpless, right? Completely pathetic. What's that?
A loaf of barley,
yeah. Helpless, completely pathetic, also cheap entity suddenly brings about the destruction of this entire army. Now, we've already seen that the whole story with Gideon started on Pesach. All this is going on Pesach, over Pesach. Hashem's first contact with Gideon was the Seder night. It was right after they had bought the Korban Oimer, which was a barley offering. They had bought the barley offering. Therefore Hashem is saying, you have no idea what the effect of what seems like a little insignificant mitzvah is. What is the Korban Oimer? What sacrifice does it involve? talking about a handful of barley. That's what the Omer is. Right? But then, Hashem says, usually you do a mitzvah, you don't see its effect in this world. The effect has to wait for the next world. In this case, I'm going to unleash, I'm going to let loose the effect of what seems to be a minor mitzvah yet in this world. Usually you don't see that. You do a mitzvah, we do mitzvahs all the time. We do mitzvahs that might be bigger than this handful of barley. But you do the mitzvah, life moves on, nothing happened. Nothing happened. There were nuclear explosions, you just didn't see them. They happened in a higher realm. In this world, we remain completely in the dark. We don't see what our mitzvah does. But Hashem says, in this case, I'm going to actually let the reaction occur in this world. That little handful of mincha, its explosion is going to happen in this world. What did it look like? What was the effect of that little mitzvah? Little, so to speak. That little mitzvah, the entire army of Midian was destroyed. The nuclear reaction happened in this world. But this really is just an example of what the value of every mitzvah is. Just, like I heard Rav Avadia Yosef say one time, why is there a rule that you can't see the effect of a mitzvah in this world, you have to wait for the next world? He said, because this world can't contain the effect of what a mitzvah is. Right? First of all, do three mitzvahs. As he's saying here, we're talking about a relatively small mitzvah. Right? Is enough to destroy an army of 120,000 people. When a person is doing a mitzvah, it just can't be contained in this world. And therefore we say, our mitzvahs generally just operate in the next world. In this world, Hashem gave an example of where actually the power of the mitzvah is going to be unleashed. You're going to see that little handful of barley rolling around, and yes, like a bowling ball, simply destroying the entire army of Midian. So what happened? So Gideon is encouraged. He's ready to go fight. Vayachat es shlosh me'isaish. So he divided the 300 men into shlosh shel rosh, into three divisions. Vayitein shofaris biyad kulam. Now, of course, you have to arm the people. You got to equip them with weapons. So he gave them weapons. What did he give them? Sophisticated weaponry. A shofar for each man. Vikadim reikim. But 1 minute, it gets more sophisticated than that. And he gave them empty jugs. Vilapidim b'toy hakadim. With torches. Each man carried a jug, a torch, which he covered with a jug. Apparently the torch had parts sticking out, they were able to put the jug over it in a way that wouldn't extinguish it. But they were walking with torches that were covered with jugs. On one hand, shofar on the other hand, here they're ready to take on the army of Midian. Okay? Now, what's the idea? They don't want to make light. They're approaching the camp from three different directions. Three groups of 100 people. They don't want to be detected, so they cover the light of the torches. What's the strategy? What's the battle plan? Gideon says, wait, you'll see what I do, and that's what you'll do. That's the way you approach a battle, right? So, Vayema Aleihem, Gideon says to them, Mimeni Til'u V'chein Tasi. You watch me, you take your cues from me. What you see me do, that's what you do. V'hine Anoichi Bo B'Kteh Amachneh. I'm going to approach the edge of the Midianite camp, meaning me with my division. There will be two other divisions of 100 soldiers each. We're each going to approach. And then what I do, you do. Here's the battle plan. When we approach, I'm going to blow the shofar. Anoichi v'chol asher iti, me and all the people that are with me. And then you all blow the shofaros as well. All around the camp, meaning we're going to be surrounding it. Three different divisions from three sides. And then you cry out the battle cry for Hashem through Gideon. This means this is a battle for Hashem. We're representing Hashem here. In other words, we're introducing the player. That's really what they're saying. They understood that they're not the fighters here. They're introducing. How do you say when you introduce greet Hashem, right? And then you'll see Hashem get to work. Uli Gidon, and Hashem is doing this through Gidon. Okay. Now, Vayovoy Gidon Omer Isha Sheritoy, and Gidon and the 100 men that were with him came Bikteh Machane toward the edge of the Midianite camp. Roish Hashmeres Hatichayim. At the beginning of the middle watch, meaning the night was divided into shifts of guards, and it was the middle shift of the night, there was a changing of the guard. Achokem hekimu es hashomrim, as they were in the middle of changing the guards, vayitkeu b'shofaros, and all of a sudden Gideon's division all blew their shofaros, then a fight hakadim asher b'yadam, and they all smashed the jugs in their hands, which caused all of a sudden a great burst of light, which was very surprising. The Midianite people, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden the whole light, the night lit up. Vayitkeu shloishes harashim b'shofaros, so all three divisions blew their shofaros. You had 300 shofaros sounding together. Vayishbiru akadim, and they all smashed the jugs. Vayachziku biyad smoylam balapidim, and in their left hands they all held the torches. Ubayad yeminam hashofaros litkoya, and in their right hand they held the shofar to blow. So what happened here is that in the Midianite camp, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there was suddenly an explosion of light. The whole night lit up, and they heard hundreds of shofaros being blown. Now, as we said before, generally, the head of a division blew a shofar to get his division going. That was the battle cry. That was what activated. When they heard hundreds of shofaros, what they heard was hundreds of divisions coming at them. That's what they heard. And it came at the same time as a sudden flash of light, meaning they suddenly sensed that they were subject to an immense surprise attack by huge forces. And it was all very sudden. They weren't able to make out what was going on. Vayikru, and they called out, Cherev la'Hashem u'legidai. Again, this is the way the Jewish wars work. What did they call out? They said, Rabbeisai, mi our Hashem. And they stood back to just let Hashem do his thing. This is how they fought their war. Vayamdu ishtachtov soviv la'machane. Again, they gave their battle cry, Rabbeisai, here's Hashem. And then they just stood their ground. Right? All 300 men, they blew, smashed the jugs, holding the torches, and stood there. And enter Hashem. Vayorotz kol hamachane. And in the camp of Midian, pandemonium broke loose. So vayoriu vayonusu. So what happened? They understood that they were being attacked. So the leaders of the whoever can in Midian grabbed shofaros, their own shofaros, to call to rally their own troops to battle. And so what happened? You have 100,000 people. They all of a sudden see that the whole night is lit up and they're being attacked. They were sure that the Jews are already among them. Right? They're sure they're already, the Jews are already among them. Then they hear a person behind them blowing a shofar. They're sure it's a Jew. Right? So some of them started running. Others turned around to battle the people blowing the shofaros. Right? Others saw people fleeing. They were sure it was Jews and they started chasing them. So where was the Jewish army? They hadn't entered the camp at all. They simply stood their ground outside and continued blowing. That's all. But like we said, enter Hashem. Hashem actually went down into the camp. Within the Midianite camp, it suddenly turned into one bloodbath. They all started fighting each other. Throughout the entire camp, it turned into Midianites battling each other. And people were running in all directions. And the camp dispersed and they fled. They fled immense distances until the area of Beis Hashita, Atzfas Ovel Mechoyla Al Tabos. Okay, it's describing the areas that they reached in their flights. So all of a sudden, the whole army is suddenly just one big panicking commotion. Vayitzayg Ish Yisrael min Naphtali Umin Asher Vayirdifu Acharei Midian. So now, Midian comes back to what we alluded to before. All of a sudden, now Gideon said, alright, that's it, the battle is won. I think they won the battle. Now, he rallied the people. Remember we said that he had sent the people who were afraid home, and they went and they camped on Har Gilah planning to leave in the morning. But now already, we can make good use of them. He called them back. Okay, Rabbi Isai, the people of Midian are fleeing. Just chase. And they went all running after Midian. So again, this is a classic, what we've been seeing in other battles also. Hashem comes in, creams the enemy. All the Jews have to do is chase and clean up the mess. Just make sure that nobody survives. Then Gideon sent messengers all throughout Ephraim, the mountain of Ephraim, Lamor, told them to say, Reduli kras Midian. The army of Midian is in panic and they're fleeing. Come down towards them. Veligdu lahem esamayim. And trap them at the waters. Ad beis baraves hayadim. These people of Midian, now that they lost any sense of, you know, their leaders were gone, they were just running in all directions, they were heading home. The places to get out of Eretz Yisrael, the passageways were these two water bodies, Beis Hara and the Jordan River, where they wanted to escape from there to Chutz La'aretz, back home. Now they weren't such bullies anymore. They felt comfortable in Eretz Yisrael up till now. Vayitzayik kolish Ephraim, but the people of Ephraim rallied. Vayilkidu es hamayim, and they trapped, they cut off the area of the water, they trapped them at the water. Ad Beis Bara ve'es hayadim. They cut off, they sealed off the whole area of Beis Bara and the Jordan. Vayilkidu shnei sarei Midian, and they captured the two officers of Midian, the two generals. Es Oirev ve'es Ze'ev. The names were Oirev and Ze'ev. So it sounds like a nice Jewish name, but apparently it was a good name too. Vayargu es Oirev b'tzur Oirev, and they killed Oirev in Tzur Oirev, in the Rock of Oirev. That's not a coincidence. They named it Tzur Oirev in remembrance of this miracle. It hadn't been, didn't just happen to be that they caught him in a place called Tzur Oirev. They killed Oirev in Tzur Oirev. Ve'es Ze'ev horgu b'yekev Ze'ev. And they killed Ze'ev in the wine press of Ze'ev, which also means that they caught him in a certain wine press, and they killed him there, and then they named the place that in remembrance of this miracle. Ve'edifu el Midian. And they continued chasing the Midianites all the way back to Midian. V'roish Oirev Ze'ev heviu el Gidon me'ev el Ayadim. And the heads of these Oirev and Ze'ev people, these were the people who had been commandeering the whole persecution up till now, they brought to Gidon on the other side of the Yadim. Okay? We're still in the middle of the action, but we're going to stop here for this. What's that?